This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
So happy to be here. Everything that's going on here means so much to me, means so much to my story, my journey. I want to just talk a little bit about my book, my journey, and how it connects to everything we're doing here tonight with Safe Kids Stories. So my book is called Buck. Young Buck, Buck Wild, Buck Shots, Bucktown, Slave Buck, Black Buck, Make Buck, Buck Now. I wanted a title that was short, obviously, but also reflective of a long experience, you know. So Young Buck, that's what we called it, that's what they called me growing up in Uptown Philadelphia. They called me Young Buck. Buck Wild, that's kind of what happened in my story and my journey and losing control. Buck Shots, that refers to, you know, the violence that's destroying our communities, and that's why this is so important, right? That, you know, I saw people murdered and I saw people lose their life. So when I say Buck Shots, I'm talking about that. When I say Bucktown, I'm talking about the musicality of my life and my journey, the soundtrack, which is hip-hop. So Bucktown is an old-school hip-hop reference. We say Slave Buck, Black Buck, and that's referring to the racism that once was, because, you know, buck used to be a derogatory term, you know, during slavery and things like that. They would say, we're selling this big black buck for sale. So buck is derogatory. So when I say black buck, slave buck, I'm talking about the racism that was, but also still exists today, obviously. We still have to say Black Lives Matter. We see what's going on. So that's still with us. I say make buck, I'm talking about entrepreneurship, and just everybody in Philly has a hustle, can hustle, knows some kind of, has a couple different revenue streams or whatever. So when I say make buck, I'm talking about that form of education. And then I say buck now, and I'll come back to what buck now means for me, because that's kind of like really the most important part of the book. So I'll come back to that at the end. But that's what Buck is. I wanted to also tell a story. I didn't want to write a story from me, the perspective now, looking back. I wanted to write a story from me, the perspective I was when I was young. So Buck starts when I'm 13, it ends when I'm 18, and it's written in the first person present tense. You get to experience what I experienced, see what I saw, and kind of grow with me. It's so interesting that we're talking about safety and literature and narratives. I wanted to write a story that was first person present tense. I wanted to put you into it, because just like Peter Kahn put it wonderfully, these issues are urgent. So when you read something in the first person present tense, there's a sense of urgency, there's a sense of immediacy there. I want to give you kind of a little taste of some of what's in Buck. And it opens up, I mean, in so many ways you can describe Buck. I usually describe Buck as a book about education. It's a book about education. It's a book about miseducation, about re-education, about street education, about self-education. And it's a book that talks about the differences and the distance and the similarities between school and education, right? So it differentiates the two, combines the two, talks about the two, but it's a book about education. But it's also a book about safety, if you think about it, because in a lot of ways, we talk about going through that darkness, getting through that danger to get to somewhere safe. And so Buck starts out, "The Fall in Killadelphia." That's the opening line of Buck, right? So we're talking about safety, and this is the beginning of Buck. "The Fall in Killadelphia. Outside is the color of cornbread and blood. Change hangs in the air like the sneaks on the live wires behind my crib. Me and my big brother Uzi in the kitchen. He's rolling a blunt on top of the source. The one with Tyson on the cover, rocking a koofy, ice grilling through the goss. Uzi can roll a blunt with his eyes closed." So in the beginning of the first paragraph of this book, I mean, we have the fall in Killadelphia. We've got live wires behind the crib. We got Mike Tyson. The danger is already palpable. You can already feel the environment. And so this whole thing about going towards safety is so important, because ultimately that's where we go, right? You know, it's a funny thing. I said I was just in San Francisco, and I was working with juveniles the last 2 days. I've been in the juvenile system in Oakland and San Francisco. I've been working with young people. And we've been talking a lot about slang. They've been teaching me the California slang, the Oakland slang, and I've been teaching them a little bit about the Philly slang. One of the things I wanted to do in this book is introduce the world to kind of not just the world that I grew up in, but also the language. I love language. I love words. So, for example, in its opening scene, my brother, as I was mentioned, was, rolling up. And I say, at the end of that, I say, Uzi rolls another perfect blunt. John looks like a paintbrush. Now, everybody from Philly obviously knows the word John, but when I go around, you know, other places, people are like, what are you talking about, John? So I remember when I wrote this book, I sent it to my editor, and my editor's like, what's John? And I'm like, okay, I have to put a little line in here to kind of, like, explain it. So I'll tell you what I came up with. I said, another perfect blunt. John looks like a paintbrush. John could mean anything. Person, place, or thing. Sometimes if we're telling a story and we don't want people to know what we're talking about, we'll plug John in for everything. Yo, the other day I was at the John around the corner with the young John from down the street, right? We get to the John, right? And the boy at the door all on his John, not knowing I had that John on me, man. It was about to be on in that John. So, you know, it was so important to me when I learned about, you know, it's interesting. When I learned about, like, you know, I grew up in a household that was very Afrocentric. And one thing that was interesting to me, I just came back from Nigeria not too long ago. And I was actually just talking to my new young buck back there who's from Nigeria. We were talking about Yoruba culture. But what's interesting and fascinating to me about Nigeria is there's 400 languages spoken there, you know? And so you think that's just one country in Africa. And so when I think about, like, how black people got to this country, we think, you know, you got to remember African people spoke so many different languages. It wasn't, you know, Africa's not a country. It's a huge continent with so many languages. So when we got here as African Americans, we didn't all speak English. We spoke all different languages, but we had to learn English. But then we had this paradox and complexity because the people that are teaching us the language are also the people that are having us enslaved, right? And so part of that safety that we're talking about here tonight is about language, right? Because what African Americans had to do is learn, what we say in Philly is freak the language. We had to learn how to use the same. That's why, you know, I mean, back in the day, I'll give you an example, a funny example. So back in the day, you could have a situation where there are, let's say, a lot of, you know, enslaved Africans, and they're on a plantation, and then there's like some slave master somewhere out of sight somewhere, right? And someone comes up and says, did you hear that MK escape slavery? And they say, MK escaped slavery? That's a bad nigga. Now, the white slave owner that hears that is going to say, yes, that's a bad nigga because he escaped slavery. Yes, yes. Now, all the black people in the room, you know, on the plantation know that when you say bad nigga, that you really are celebrating me, that I'm really a hero, and that it's not bad at all. And as soon as the slave master finally realizes that bad means good, then the slang changes, and it's some whole other new slang. And so that's been the journey. So for me, all of all this stuff is very connected to our history, but it is about safety. It's about liberation. How can you get to safety and freedom without being able to freak the language, the narratives, the words? It's so important. So that's part of what I wanted to do in this book. But the book is not about that. The book is about my family and my journey toward education, my journey toward the blank page. The blank page saved me. America enraged me. Then that trick paid me. New slaves, old slavery. My grandma told me the streets far from holy. Now I'm lonely. My homies' bodies is holy. You know, I wanted to talk about all the different challenges, you know, writing a memoir so vulnerable. I said, young buck, buck wild, buck shots, buck town, slave buck, black buck, make buck, buck now. But I didn't talk about the other buck, which is buck naked, you know. And what I learned, you know, so buck naked is interesting because when you write a memoir, buck is my fourth book. And it's by far the most difficult, challenging, you know, exhausting work that I've ever done, because when you write a memoir, you're essentially buck naked, you know? You become, you know, you're taking off all your clothes and you're just showing the world, and they can stare at you and look at you and analyze you, and that's what you do when you write a memoir in a lot of ways. And so oftentimes we're taught, and this relates to this whole notion of safety, we're taught from a young age that vulnerability, I gotta step into the light, vulnerability is weakness. We're taught that vulnerability is weakness. What I learned as a writer writing a memoir is that actually that vulnerability is my strength. It gave me tremendous power to be vulnerable in that way, and made me, I talk about in the book, I use the word called unfuckwittable. And that's what I feel like that vulnerability did for me, you know? So in this book, we don't have a whole lot of time, so I'm going to kind of jump forward. But this book talks a lot about my struggles, At home, my family struggles. My brother was incarcerated. My mom has severe health, mental health issues, turbulent relationship with my father. All that's in the book. I talk about, you know, getting kicked out of different schools, coming up, and just all these challenges. But I want to talk about the safety element. I want to talk about what saved me. I want to talk about the transformation. And so I want to jump forward, way forward in the book. So I found myself at this alternative school, and, you know, this is when I'd already got in trouble in school, kicked out of schools, really not really feeling education, or not feeling school, right? I don't think I knew what education was at the time, but I wasn't feeling school, and so my mom kind of begged me to get into this school, tell me, you know, would you go to school? If I find a school that would take you, will you go? I said, sure, Mom, I'll go if you find a school. So my mom found a school that'll take me. And I get to the school, and it's a real weird place. I mean, to this day, some of the weirdest kids I've ever seen in my life. That's just being honest, you know. One kid was, I walk in the door, he's banging his head against the wall. He's using his own blood to make a painting. I mean, this is, you know, I was like, this is an alternative school? I'm not this damn alternative. You know what I mean? Take me to the pub. So anyway, but I stayed for my mom. And anyway, I'm in this class one day, and this teacher puts blank pieces of paper in front of everybody, and she says, okay, class, now write. And the whole class just starts scribbling fast like reporters at a press conference. Everybody just writing. And I'm just chilling there, you know. And then the teacher comes up, and she says, you know, write. What you want me to write? You know, now I'm kind of frustrated. What you want me to write? She says, write anything you want. And immediately in my mind, I just felt like she wasn't being genuine. You know, people say things like that all the time. Hey, how you doing, man? But they don't really want to know how you're doing. You know, like, if you really told them what's going on and, you know, all the difficult, you know, they might not want to know all that. So people say things, oh, write what you want. But then when you really write what you want, it's not okay, right? And so that's what I felt at the time. And so I said, oh, okay, write whatever I want. Okay, cool. So I wrote Buck School without the B. So I wrote Buck School without the B, and she looks at it, and you know, my whole plan was she was gonna see the curse and flip out and kick me out of class, and I would go back to G-Town, and that would be that. But instead, she saw it, and she said, keep going. And I wanna share with you some of the things that happened after that. I turned the page over. It's blank again. The blank page is the starter pistol that fires and triggers my mind to sprint. What will I write? What will I say? Will I say what I write? Write what I say? Maybe something funny, something serious. Damn, what am I gonna write about? Something about my family, something about Amir, Ryan. How will I start? Whose story will I tell? My story? Maybe something made up? What about a story about a boy from Philly? A lost boy who wants to find himself but doesn't know where to look. Who wants to tell his story but doesn't know where to begin or end. Who searches anyway and discovers something about himself, about the world. I stare at the blank page, an ocean of white alive with possibility. I hear myself take a breath, then exhale deep like I just rose from underwater. It's like I'm at the free throw line again. Foul shots, like the game is on the line again. I remember something my pops told me, shoot to make it. My hand is shaking now, trembling like it's freezing. And then it hits me, a silence louder than all the music I've ever heard in my life. All the light in the world in one beam before me. I grip the pen and something shoots down my spine, sits me straight up. The pen feels heavy like it's made of stone. At exactly which point do you start to realize that life without knowledge is death in disguise? I stare deep into the blank page and I see myself. I feel something I've never felt before. Purpose. I don't know what my exact purpose is yet, but I know it has something to do with this pen and this blank page. Shit, I am a blank page. Holding the pen this way, snug and firm in my fist, makes me feel like I can write my future, like I can spell out my destiny in sharp strokes. The blank page begs me to tell a story, dares me to tell one that's never been told before, and to tell it like it will never be told again. The blank page lights up a room in my heart that I didn't even know existed. So that's the moment for me. Thank you. That's the moment. That's one of the huge transitional moments in my life. And that moment, you know, being a writer and liking to write. I would come to class early and I'd be writing. And the teacher was, you know, when I first started, the teacher said, "Oh, you kind of like this writing thing, huh?" I mean, I was like, "It's all right, you know, it's cool." You know, I didn't want to be so enthusiastic yet. You know, I wasn't comfortable. Again, safety, right? I didn't feel, again, that vulnerability. I didn't want to come into class and be like, "Oh my God, I love this stuff. Like, I want to write all day." I wasn't ready to. I was still had that shell, that tough exterior. So she's like, you really like this?" And I'm like, "I mean, it's cool or whatever, you know." So I continue to write, and then that leads to reading, right? And I get a book, and I start reading, and I become a voracious reader because I feel like I missed out on all this time. And then I had another epiphany. I said, "Oh, now I see why reading was illegal for black people during slavery." I always used to hear that. You know, some of the old people would tell me, "You know, back in the day, reading used to be illegal, you know." And that just never really, it never meant anything to me until I really started to think about the reality of that, right? The reality of reading being illegal. Like back in the day, what was your name again? I'm sorry. What was it?
Chenoa.
Like, so back in the day, Chenoa, you know, we could be in jail or whatever. I come into jail. You like, Chenoa's in there. With, you know, she like, "What you in here for, MK?" I'm like, "Yo, I was on chapter 8. And they just bust in the door. You know what I mean? Like, it's so crazy to think about that. Back in the day, you could get booked for a book, you know? Like, you could really do time for a book. If you're driving in the car, and you got books in the car, and the cops pull you over, got to throw the books out the window, you know, put the book in your butt crack, you know what I mean? Like, all of this stuff. And then somebody has to read that one day. You know? But I had this amazing epiphany. Wow, now I see why reading was illegal. We sub-vocalize. We think in words, you know? So if you limit someone's vocabulary, you're not just limiting their vocab, you're limiting their thoughts. They can't even think of freedom because they don't have the language to access that, right? So for me, this all became connected to my liberation, right? Words became emancipatory because the more things that, more words I know, more I say in the book, my thoughts and my vocabulary grow together like the petals and stem of a flower, right? And so these things grow together, and all of a sudden, more words means more options means more choices means the ability to design my own reality and to be safe. Because in so many ways, like I said, this book is about a journey to safety, a journey to freedom, and to me, freedom and safety are really synonymous, you know? It's the same, right? Freedom is safety. And that's why I talked about the analogy on the plantation or whether we're talking about John. It's the freedom to express ourselves. And so I found myself through language, through words, through writing, through reading, and I totally 1,000,000% support what you guys are doing here because it worked for me, it saved me, and thank you. I didn't talk about what Bucknell meant and what that was about. I said I was going to come back to it. So there's a part of the book where I got arrested, and I'm in the 35th precinct, which is on Broad, down there near Broad and Olney. And I had another kind of epiphany, and I just want to read from that part really quick, and then I'll explain how that's connected to what Buck is truly about. I say, this is a chapter called The Kite. I say, decisions lead to options, options to choices, choices to freedom. We all design our own reality, write our own script, build our own house or prison or coffin. Me against Law and Order, my nickname was Milo, and I always thought that stood for Me Against Law and Order. That was the acronym I came up with. Me Against Law and Order is about being a true rebel, pushing against the grain, making my own path, bucking the stereotypes, bucking the traps, bucking the system. I think about this show I saw on the Nature Channel the other day about elephants, about how despite weighing up to 25,000 pounds and standing 13 feet tall, they can still be chained. How, I wondered. It starts when the elephants are babies. Someone puts a metal chain attached to a wooden peg nailed into the ground around the baby elephant's foot. The baby elephant struggles but fails to break free and learns at that very moment not to struggle. That struggle is useless. Later on, even when the elephant can easily break free, it doesn't. I look around the 35th precinct at all the sad, hard, gray, black faces and see nothing but elephants. Buck Now is about bucking the traps, bucking the stereotypes, setting your own path. It's about being a true rebel. You know, before I was a rebel without a cause, without a purpose. And it's about taking that rebellious spirit, that energy of youth, and putting it into something positive and bucking, being Buck. That's what that we're redefining what Buck is. So that's what Buck Now is. Thank you. Thanks so much.